It's Freddie Prinze Jr. and Jeff Dye back in the ring. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. Hey, Jeff. Are you ready to rumble our way into an all-new season of Wrestling with Freddy?
You better believe I have. I've been practicing my body slams, and I'm jacked.
All right, don't go injuring yourself now. We'll be highlighting the best stories and matches of the week in wrestling from AEW, WWE, and have one-on-one talks with the best talents in the world of pro wrestling.
Listen to Wrestling with Freddy on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
The Volume.
This is Boxing with Chris Mannix, presented by FanDuel. It might be cold outside, but the sports calendar is heating up, and there's no better place to get in on the action than with FanDuel. The app is safe, secure, and easy to use. FanDuel always has exclusive offers, boosts, and more. When you win, you'll get paid fast. FanDuel has lots of ways to play, like the spread, money line, over-unders, team totals, player props, and so much more. Jump into the action at any time during the game with live betting, combine multiple bets from the same game in a same-game parlay, and try out the same-game parlay plus. And FanDuel is now live in Maryland, near where Gervonta Davis is going to fight in just a few weeks. So use the promo code BOXING and download the FanDuel app today to start making every moment more. Promo code BOXING.
This is Boxing with Chris Mannix.
Oh, somebody punch him in the face.
Anthony Joshua is a composed and ferocious finisher. Watch this.
Andy Ruiz is the heavyweight champion.
Hosted by SI's Chris Mannix.
That was my moment.
Now with interviews, analysis, and everything going on in the world of boxing.
When you have talent, you are given another chance.
Here's Chris Mannix.
And we are back. Boxing with Chris Mannix, part of the Volume Sports Podcast Network. Back at home this week. No road trips this week, but I will make my way to New York for the Teofimo Lopez-Sandor Martin fight this weekend. Pop in on Saturday. That should be a good one on ESPN. We've got some stuff over in the UK. Josh Warrington back in action, but there's a lot going on in the business of boxing as well. To talk about that and much more, I want to bring in a guy I just saw this past weekend in Arizona, Jake Donovan, senior writer over at BoxingScene.com. He was in Glendale, Arizona for Chocolatito Estrada Part 3, which was interesting for a lot of different reasons. Jake, how you doing, man?
I'm doing good, Chris. Yeah, I feel like it's been a few days since I last saw you. So.
All right, let's start with last weekend. Roman Gonzalez, Juan Francisco Estrada, they fight for the third time. You know, for the second fight in a row, it was ultra competitive. The first fight was competitive, but that was a pretty clear win for Chocolatito back in 2012. He was the more experienced fighter, Estrada coming down in weight. But for the last like 24 rounds, you've got 23 of them probably that could have gone either way. The judges saw it for Juan Francisco Estrada. How did you see that fight?
I had it ever so slow. I had it 115-113 for Gallo Estrada. I'm perfectly fine if the fight was a draw, which I believe you had it, if I'm not mistaken. I would have been fine. I don't know if Chocolatito deserved to win. His team was pretty adamant. I don't know if you caught that in the hotel lobby. Like, a few of them were like staring me down hard when I said, I'm like, yeah, I had Gallo winning by two. They're like, what do you mean by that? I'm like, it was that close of a fight. But I would have been fine with a draw and part four. It seems like a lot of us were like, you know, it took a little bit to get going. Once it got going, it's like, okay, this is the rivalry we've remembered for the past 10 years. And I certainly wouldn't mind seeing 12 or less more rounds.
Yeah, you can't be upset at the decision when, I mean, look, they gave away the first half of the fight, or most of it anyway.
Absolutely.
You know, I had the benefit of listening in on the corner, and you could hear Marcos Caballero, his trainer, you know, telling him through the fifth round, like, what's that old line? You're blowing it, baby. You're blowing
it.
Like, you know, the Angelo Dundee line. Like, they gave it away in the first part of that fight. And look, Chocolatito is pretty well known to be something of a slow starter. He oftentimes takes that first round off to figure out how a guy's going to fight him and adjust accordingly. He lost the first two rounds, the first two first rounds against Estrada in the previous fights. But this was different. Yep. This was like kind of an old car on a winter's day, you know, kind of getting started there. Like once it did get started in like that sixth round, he was great. Yep. Like I thought he won rounds 6 through 10, you know, those middle rounds. And then the last two were kind of coin flippy, but I split them. I gave Chocolatito the 11th. I gave Estrada the 12th. I had it a draw. I think if you go back, and I went back and rewatched the 11th round of that fight, because if Dennis O'Connell, one of the judges, had scored that round for Gonzalez, we would have had a majority draw because of the way his scorecard shook out. I thought O'Connell actually was right. I thought Estrada deserved that 11th round. I would have flipped it on my own card there. So I don't think that the Gonzalez team had much of a leg to stand on. And even going in the corner to do an on-camera interview with Caballero, you know, he was pretty clear. He's like, we're going to get it going at some point, but we didn't get it going. We're not getting it going right now. I mean, that to me, Jake, was the story of this fight, that for whatever reason, whether it's a credit to Estrada for what he was doing or something Chocolatito was not doing, he just couldn't get it going early on.
Yeah, no, I agree 100%. And Gallo, he made a point to mention that he, as hard as he worked in that second fight, he still got outworked by Chocolatito. I think Chocolatito threw like 100 more punches in that second fight. They set the copy box record. This one, he made a point to say that he was training in the mountains. He didn't want Chocolatito to outwork him. He didn't, but it was weird. It's like they both, we saw their work rate decline significantly, but it worked to Gallo's advantage. He took advantage of the stuff that Chocolatito gave him early. I found it interesting, though, that he did start to fade once, you know, Chocolatito came on. But I also wonder, too, like if he had to go full throttle, like if Chocolatito could have kept up. But I don't know if like he was holding anything in reserve or he knew he was doing just enough to win. But it felt like it was mission accomplished on his part. But it was interesting to see them both slow down. But I'm with you. It was like for the first six rounds, it's like, man, are we really? It's like, is this the end of Chocolatito? Like, did he just get old overnight? Not overnight, but, you know, over the past year, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I was talking to Sergio Mora about this. If that fight had been the reverse, where Chocolatito started fast and faded late, you'd say, all right, maybe he's done. Maybe it's time for the 35-year-old to retire. But he picked it up late and, you know, showed, you know, great prowess in the later rounds. So, you know, you never know. But, you know, after the fight, Gallo Estrada was like, I'll do a fourth fight. In fact, he was like basically asking for a fourth fight against Gonzalez. Right. Do we need a fourth fight right now between Estrada and Chocolatito?
I would say if Estrada has no other option, he was pretty adamant, you know, he had to give up two belts to get to this third fight. He had to give up the WBC belt, which he held since he beat Sorung Bisay in the rematch. He had to give up the WBA belt that he won from Chocolatito, regardless of how you had that decision. He said, you know, once I get this belt back, I want to get all the belts. So there is a straight shot. You interview Joshua Franco after the fight. He's going to Tokyo to fight Kazuto Aoka. The WBA and WBO belts are on the line. I know for a fact Joshua Franco absolutely wants to fight all those guys. Bam knows this because he was willing to let Joshua fight Gallo and Chocolatito ahead of him. He's even given up, you know, the belt that was at stake last weekend. So if Joshua Franco wins, the matter is then, can Mr. Honda convince Junto Nakatani, who's going to be owed the winner because the WBO mandatory, get him to maybe stand down. Then Estrada can go unify three belts and then convince, okay, well, Chocolatito can go in, maybe get that fourth fight that way if Estrada, you know, prevails and all that. So yeah. I think if Estrada, I don't know if he's going to get Fernando Martinez. I know he has his own mandatory with the IBF. He's kind of on the PBC side. Maybe they deliver him, you know, who knows. But if he doesn't get that winner, then, yeah, we could see a fourth fight. And also, too, if Chocolatito wants to continue, you have to think about what his next options are. So, you know, if it's best business for both of them without, you know, stretching too far, why not do it again?
Yeah, look, I understand why Estrada wants that fourth fight. It represents the biggest payday he's going to get. And when you're in those smaller weight classes, kind of what's been going on in boxing lately where you can make a lot of money to fight nobodies in the upper weight class. Yeah. That doesn't really exist in the smaller weight classes. To make the most money, you've got to take the most substantial fights. And I'm sure Estrada is looking at his bank account going, we do it again, I'm going to make a significant amount of money, probably more than I made for this fight. As a fan and a watcher of boxing, I don't know if I want to see it next. I wouldn't mind seeing Estrada go on to potentially face the winner of that Ioka versus Joshua Franco fight. That's a pretty compelling fight. You could do that in the U.S., especially if it's Franco. You may be able to do it in Japan if it's Ioka. There's a lot of places and a lot of money to be made if you do a fight like that. And for Chuck Liddito, you know, he said something to me in the ring that struck me. And then the next morning, a couple members of his team brought this up again. Right now, Roman Gonzalez isn't really interested in legacy. Like, he feels like his legacy is secure, and he's right. He's one of the greatest little men of all time. He's a first ballot Hall of Famer no matter what happens the rest of his career. The only thing that is concerning Gonzalez right now is his bank account. So he'll be back if you give him high six figures to fight somebody, whether it is Joshua Franco in the U.S., Ioka in the U.K., or even Estrada. I think he'd fight Estrada again if the money was right. But Chocolatito ain't going out there and fighting Fernando Martinez for a couple hundred grand. Like, that's not going to happen. Like, at this stage of his career, from what I can gather from his people, he has no interest in doing that. So I don't think we've seen the last of Chocolatito, Jake, but somebody's going to have to come along with a big purse to get him back in the ring. He might only fight one time next year because the money just isn't to his liking. In fact, I don't know. You probably know this. I don't know what the exact purses were for this fight for both those guys, but I can tell you there was some grumbling going on within Gonzalez's team about how much money they were making. They wanted even more than what they made for this fight. So I get the sense that he's going to wait this out and wait for some kind of mega offer from somebody to get him back in the ring.
Yeah, and that was the whole thing with why Estrada even gave up his belt. He didn't want to, you know, settle for, obviously it was a low purse bid by Golden Boy. They were going to, you know, try to make it up to him, but it just wasn't worth his while. So he was willing to wait out the Chocolatito. And Chocolatito said the same thing. Like, he wants, you know, the fights that are going to, you know, get him out of bed in the morning, I guess, so to speak. I keep thinking, there's one fight that kind of interests me for Chocolatito. If he can't get the fourth fight with Estrada, why not a third fight with Sorungvisai? Because I think Sorungvisai is a little bit past it. Avenge that, you know, that's the only one out of the series that he hasn't beaten. He's 0-2 against him. It's just Estrada is the only one who's beaten everyone in that Fab Four. So, you know, if Chocolatito needs like a time marking fight, I think that's a safe one, because I feel like once these guys venture out of that Fab Four, you're going to see, I think they're all a bit past prime. Estrada is probably the only one left that has some of his prime left. I do believe, like, Chocolatito, he's in the twilight, and, you know, I know he's not going to fight Bam Rodriguez probably ever. They're very close. But, like, if he fought, you know, one of those young guns, they're going to pick him up. You know, he had the perfect style to, you know, put, you know, we saw Julio Cesar Martinez in that mess of a co-feature. He's not, you know, stylistically the most pretty, you know, the prettiest fighter. So Chocolatito was able to exploit that when he was supposed to fight Estrada early this year. But I feel like once, you know, if he has to fight any of these young contenders, even an Andrew Maloney type, I'm not sure he survives. And that's, like you said, it wouldn't damage his legacy. We'd both vote him into the Hall of Fame right now if we could. But I just don't, not even fighting like someone like Junto Nakatani. I think, stick within that Fab Four. If Sorungvisai has anything left in his career, why not try to avenge those defeats?
Yeah, that could be a marketable fight. I think you'd like to see Sorungvisai get back out against somebody and get a win. I don't know if you can make that fight with Chocolatito coming off the Bam Rodriguez just demolition. It just wouldn't be as marketable. If he comes back, knocks somebody out, all of a sudden you might be able to make a fight like that happen at this point. One more thing from this card. You and I were talking about young fighters basically during the broadcast at times. I kept walking over to you and Cliff Rold over there in Press Row to discuss certain things. Diego Pacheco, real deal, man. Like, real deal, this kid. Like, Eddie Hearn, and I've done a lot of Matchroom shows, obviously, with The Zone. You know, Top Rank's got a lot of guys that are hitting. They've got probably the best young... They do have the best young stable in boxing. But I think Eddie Hearn found something here in Diego Pacheco. Diego Pacheco, 4 wins in 2022, caps it off with a knockout win over Adrian Luna, who thankfully is cornered through in the towel, because whoever that referee was about to let that fight continue in that moment, and Luna would have gotten killed. But Pacheco's 21 years old, and he is showing bone-crushing power. Now, you got to see him against better opposition. That's coming, I think, next year, maybe beginning in his next fight. But I look at this kid as top three, top five prospect of the year and someone that I think can be a real contender at 168. What do you think when you see Diego Pacheco?
I'm with you 100% on that. And it seems like Matchroom and Papa Jose, they're all on that same page. Jose Sr., he even said like he wasn't dismissing Luna, but I think he kind of saw what was coming just because of the development he's seen in Diego Pacheco. But he said, you know, we're going to step it up in 2023. He wants to get to that point where fighting like legitimate 10-round fighters, guys that, you know, maybe can stretch him a little bit and test him out. Eddie said maybe two more fights. I think they're going to plan to take him in the UK in the first quarter of 2023. And then he wants to get him to that contender level. Yeah, they're very excited about him, and so am I. I'd like to pick him as prospect of the year. I think he's right there in the mix. The only exception would be like if you consider Frank Martin, if he's still a prospect, or maybe if he beats Michelle Rivera, he's a contender. But I mean, like I said, it's the fact that Diego Pacheco is right at the top of that class right now. I mean, he 2023, he's a contender on the rise. He's a can't miss star. A lot of people want to criticize Eddie for not being able to build fighters in the U.S., but you look at him, I think he has a lot more upside than someone like Austin Williams, who was also on the undercard. But that's a guy that you could build into a big U.S. star.
Yeah, I agree. From Southern California, so I know Matchroom doesn't do a lot of Southern California shows, but they could start, you know, next year with Pacheco in some of those fights. I agree. Like, you know, Amo Williams didn't look great on the prelims, but I think he's got potential. He's going to face Felix Cash, I guess, next year. Mark Castro, long way to go with him. He looks okay, but I think Pacheco's starting to separate himself from those young guys in that Eddie Hearn stable. All right, also last Saturday, we had Tyson Fury in a extended sparring session with Derek Chisora, which is what we expected. Nobody expected Derek Chisora to do anything. I never really had a problem with this fight, Jake, because Fury wanted to get out. He couldn't get Joshua. He couldn't get Usyk. Right. I mean, would people have been happier if he faced Otto Wallin in a rematch? I mean, I don't think so. I mean, it wouldn't have sold as well as I'm sure Derek Chisora sold, because Chisora is still a reasonable name in the UK and is coming off a difficult win, but a win nonetheless against Kubrat Pulev. So I don't want to get into that fight. That went exactly as I thought it was going to go. But now we turn the page to 2023 with Fury and Usyk. Usyk was there. I love that he was there. I think that helps kind of push that fight over the finish line. It sure sounds like they want to do the fight in Saudi Arabia or somewhere in the Middle East. You know, give me a percentage right now. Like, next fight for Tyson Fury, first half of next year, is it against Alexander Usyk?
I'm going to say this, and I can kick myself in the butt for of all the questions I asked Eddie this weekend, the one I didn't ask him about was if Hergovich is serious about fighting for that. You know, he's the IBF mandatory. If, you know, they're going to use him as leverage, or if he's really going to. To me, that's the wild card. If he pushes for that fight, then maybe it's a hiccup. But I do like what Tyson Fury said before the fight, that if he fights Usyk, he doesn't care about Undisputed. He absolutely does not want to fight for the IBF title. He's not going to give him their money. He's still pissed off when they stripped him days after he fought Vladimir Klitschko. So that could be the out. Usyk maybe says, you know what, screw it. I'll let go of the IBF belt instead of fighting Hergovich. I'm going to throw it at 90%. I'm very optimistic we see that fight in 2023.
Do you think the IBF would really get in the way of that? I mean, they make exceptions for unifications pretty often, and they're now starting to screw around with interim belts. I mean, this Boots Ennis fight for an interim belt, somebody's got to explain that to me, since technically technically Errol Spence is available, still not booked to fight yet.
Second.
I feel like the IBF, you know, push comes to shove, they'll tell Hergovich to take a seat or fight on the undercard or something, you know, other than stripping, to have Hergovich versus, I don't even know the next man in line. Is it still Zhe Li Zhang at this point? But they don't move guys around much in the IBF rankings.
Right. Yeah, so I'm kind of with you. And that's what I do wonder, like I said, if they're just kind of holding on to him as leverage at this point. Because maybe Hergovich is just never going to be ready for a title shot. So screw it. Why not fight Usyk now? But I feel like I would like to see him once or twice more. I feel like there's a deal to be made. You know, maybe they're just using Hergovich, you know, take some step aside money. And to me, with the sanctioned bodies, it seems like if both parties agree, that's when the sanctioned bodies kind of step back and say, okay, well, now we'll allow this next one to happen. I mean, Hergovich, I think he would have to fight someone like Martin Bacoli for an interim title, which is, I mean, that's, you know, he's not the mandatory if he fights Martin Bacoli next, I'll tell you that. But to me, like I said, that's the only thing that's going to hold it up. If Eddie is Eddie and, you know, the Sarilin brothers, if they're serious about Hergovich fighting for that title, then Usyk would probably have to have a decision to make. If there's comment, you know, they still haven't ordered the first bid yet. Eddie, you know, he said on the November 12th show yes, the IBF ordered the fight and we asked for an immediate purse bid. You know, we're at December 7th. There's still no purse bid. So I think there's a deal to be made and we do get that. Whether it's undisputed or they just fight each other, who cares? It's still the true championship at that point.
I'd love to see Hergovich in a rematch with Zhe Li Zhang. Like that was absolutely a good fight. And like, I mean, it's not Eddie's show. It would be a top ranked Queensberry show over in the UK, but or in the Middle East, wherever it winds up. But you could certainly see like a Middle Eastern government be interested in the Chinese born Zhang and Hergovich in a undercard type of fight. That would be compelling to me. I don't know if Hergovich's team would want that because that was a fight he almost lost, but. As far as compelling fights, probably the next one in line for Filip Hrkovic. All right, let's look ahead to this weekend where Terrence Crawford is in action. We knew Terrence Crawford was going to fight, although it has been one of the most bizarre promotions that I've seen in recent memory, Jake, because every interview Crawford does, if he mentions David Avanesian, it's in passing. Like, it's never a conversation about David Avanesian. It's entirely about why the Errol Spence fight isn't happening, to the point where I was told, like, you know, Crawford was being told, like, don't do any more interviews this week if all they want to talk about is Errol Spence. Like, it doesn't help the pay-per-view or the people putting up money for it to have Terrence Crawford constantly talk about the fight that didn't happen. And for the perception to be disappointment that this is a fight against David Avanesian. So I guess I'll start here. Is this a remotely competitive fight? Avanesian's won some fights in a row. Whenever he stepped up, whether against Lamont Peterson or others, he's not performed well. Is this a competitive fight at this stage?
I think it's more competitive than people are just completely dismissive of David Avanesian because they remember, like you said, they remember him from the Lamont Peterson fight. They remember him getting cooked by, you know, Mean Machine. So he has the 6-fight win streak. It is kind of on that, you know, that domestic level, you know, the European level. He knows he doesn't know he's in way over his head. We kind of know he's in way over his head, but I think he'll be competitive. We've seen Bud struggle with guys where he doesn't completely get up for, like, you know, Mean Machine even had him hurt a couple of times. So he has those lapses and, you know, in fights like this. So I do expect Bud to eventually get him out of there. I don't, you know, Avanesian told me, he's like, I'm absolutely going to knock this fight's going to end in knockout. I'm going to get my 7th knockout in a row. I'm like, I agree with you. The fight's going to end in knockout. I don't think it'll be a complete mismatch from the opening bell, but I do think as the fight gets going, Avanesian's going to realize, okay, this is not Kerman Lejaraga. This is not Josh Kelly. You know, this is a real fight. And, but you know, he's once he gets going, he's like a freight train rolling downhill.
You know, I loved the idea of Avanesian against Virgil Ortiz when that was being discussed earlier this year. That made sense as a more competitive fight. I don't see this being, I just don't see it being competitive. But Avanesian is an aggressive fighter. And he's at some point, he's going to walk into something huge and something he didn't see coming. And he's going to get dropped and he's going to get hurt and Bud's going to win. I guess the only question I have is, you know, Bud's been off for over a year. He's 35 years old. Right. He was hurt, you know, a couple of fights ago against Agus Kavalauskas. Yep. Is there anything, has he been diminished at all at this stage of his career? But if he's the Bud Crawford we're used to seeing, and he claims he is, he doesn't have a ton of miles on his tires because of the way the last couple of years have gone. I just don't see Avanesian being able to hang with him. I generally don't weigh in on pay-per-view numbers or anything like that, but I mean, good luck with this one. Like the promotion has been such just an abject disaster. It just has. And if the Progre Zepeda fight was a bad pay-per-view and I've been told it was pretty catastrophic. I don't know how much better this one is going to be because nobody's going into this fight believing it's going to be competitive. And as compelling as Bud Crawford is, like you're just, you know, no one's paying 40. And the money being a little bit lower is good. Like that's a positive for pay-per-view. I hope more people try that. But nobody's really paying for an appearance fee, you know, for a fight like this. I mean, it just, I just don't see it at this point. So,
I don't know. Yeah, I'm with you on that. It's just been such a bizarre promotion, like you said. And just the whole thing with like wanting transparency in the Errol Spence fight, but yet not getting any of it with, you know, the BLK Prime people. It's like, we still, you know, we know what we've read about those guys, but we're not getting any answers on that front. It's like, you know, Sam Kukowski's kind of been the only, you know, I'm not even gonna say face, you know, the only voice.
He is the face. He is the face of it. Like, he's the manager for Regis Progre is now the front man for BLK Prime. And I like Sam. And it's sort of just bizarre.
Yeah. And he's usually the behind the scenes guy. You know, we both know, you know, he has a great relationship with the media, but, you know, now it's the behind the scenes guy who's, you know, decided to take the lead because nobody else would. But yeah, it's just been a bizarre one.
The blame game has been played for these last few weeks. I don't even know. Like, nobody really knows, like, who should be blamed for the failure of Spence Crawford. I mean, Bud's got his fans and supporters. They back him to the hilt. The Spence fans, they're jumping up and down on Bud on social media. And he's obviously reading all of it because he's weighing in every, 30 minutes on with some kind of counter argument. It's just been crazy to watch him do Instagram lives. And then the two of them are arguing for hedge funds on social media. It's like, it's a clinic on what not to do after a fight kind of falls apart. But I'll tell you this. I have never once blamed Bud Crawford for taking this fight. Like, if he really is guaranteed $10 million, and supposedly half of the money is already in his bank account, if he is guaranteed $10 million, who the hell wouldn't take that to fight David Avanesian? Like, obviously you care about exposure if you're Bud Crawford, but you've been on ESPN for a long time. You care about legacy and all that. But if someone's going to write a check for $10 million to fight David Avanesian, you take it. You take it. And then and then you worry about the next fight after that fight is over. The problem with this, and this goes back to Progre Zepeda too. Like, the problem is these people jumping into boxing with no coherent game plan. Like, the Marv Nation, the people behind Marv Nation that put Progre Zepeda together, like, people that were there told me there were like 5,000 fans in attendance. And as I said, the number for pay-per-view was awful. And now you have, and I don't know what they're going to, they want to pay in $2.5 million just for that fight alone to Progre and Zepeda. And now you have this event, which has got to be costing them, like, for the main event alone, $10, $11 million, depending on whatever Avanesian's getting. And, like, this is the boxing equivalent of lighting money on fire. Like, and this is the problem. Like, when you have kind of these one-off newcomers coming into the game because boxing has no barrier for entry, it kind of screws up things for other entities in the long term that are trying to build a sustainable business. And so it's good for, like, I can't blame Crawford one bit. I don't blame Progre one bit. I don't blame Zepeda one bit. But these entities that are coming in with no game plan whatsoever, it hurts the overall business of boxing.
Yeah, no, I agree 100%. And that's always been, I mean, it's been the problem for years. It's like every time there's new money, the same people are always chasing it. You know, we know the promoters, we know the managers, they line their guys up right away. And then there's nothing left. It's like you pick all the meat off the bone. And then these guys, they have to know they're going to, you know, I think the BLK people know they're going to lose their shirt in this one. Like, the theory was that if the show goes through, that's the victory. And then it's on to Adrian Broner, whatever they got planned for him in February, which I've heard some very interesting names for him.
I have too. Let's do that for a second. I don't know how comfortable I'll throw some stuff that I've heard Rolly Romero and Adrian Broner, which would be one of the wilder promotions you can have.
Right.
Because those just yelling at each other forever. And I've heard a little about Progre, but I mean, Adrian Broner does not want to get into the ring with Regis Progre. That is a bad idea.
Yeah, so I was even telling them, it's like a Broner-Rolly fight has to happen. If there's any chance of Rolly, whatever, if he doesn't have anything going on at PBC right now, that has to happen. I don't know if that's a name that's in the mix. Ivan Redcatch's name keeps popping up, which I don't even know if they think they could even sell that. One name I've heard, and I was told he's a free agent now, Golden Boy has not confirmed this to me, Blair Cobbs. An Adrian Broner-Blair Cobbs fight, that would be at least a fun promotion. I don't know. I think it would even be a competitive fight,
I hadn't heard that name. Blair at, it'd have to be at 147, which is where Broner
147,
anyway.
Right. Everything we've seen from him. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, that's pretty good. I'd probably favor Blair because he throws more punches, but Blair can also get caught. And
yes.
And Broner still got some deceptive speed, but although he hasn't shown much power at 147 and above. I could sell that. I don't think Redcatch is sellable. I think Blair Cobbs is sellable to the boxing people. I think Rolly Romero would be even more sellable because they both just kill each other at these press conferences. It might be a goofy fight, but they'd kill each other. Yeah, there's a possibility with Broner, but you know, you start doing red catch, bad. Yeah. Pro grade, terrible yeah. idea. Terrible idea. Your three-fight deal with Adrian Broner would go out the window if that was done, because Broner would never be in boxing again if he fought Regis Pro grade at that point. So,
but
we'll see.
Pro grade is a good mention, though. I'm sorry. Yeah, no, Pro grade is a good mention because obviously Sam is involved. So, you know, why not? And I've joked, Regis has been on every other platform. It just seems like the natural course of progression, he'll wind up on BLK. You know, he's fought everywhere else.
Yeah, I hope he gets some money out of it. You know, him being lost in the wilderness. I did a podcast last week, and I talked a lot about Pro Grey and kind of why people weren't signing up. I got some calls from promoters who had mentioned that, you know, Top Rank being one of them, had mentioned that they...
Right.
That there was an offer from Top Rank for Regis Pro Grey a couple of years ago. He turned down. Just reminding that, you know, it's not just, you know, promoters ignoring Pro Grey. Obviously, Matchroom, too, you know, was in the Pro Grey business, sort of, when they were trying to make that hooker fight a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, it'd be good to see Pro Grey, you know, get a decent fight. Now that he's got a belt, he's at least got the possibility of some of these good matchups actually happening for him. All right. Let's move on to the fight we got this weekend. Teofimo Lopez against Sandor Martin at Madison Square Garden. Martin, a late replacement, but a pretty good one. It was just last year that Martin beat Mikey Garcia in a big upset. Now he gets a chance to potentially secure a second one. You know, you saw Teofimo's debut at 140 pounds, and a lot of people were critical of that. They thought he got hit too much. They thought he looked a little bit slower at 140. What did you think of Teofimo's first fight at 140, and what are you kind of hoping to see from him in this one?
You know, in retrospect, it makes sense, especially when he admitted, you know, I think he admitted more so after the fact. He didn't really talk about it too much, that he had a very short training camp going into that first fight. His first fight at 140. A lot of people didn't even know if he was going to go through with it. They didn't know where his head was at. That was always the biggest issue, was just like him getting right mentally. So if it seemed like it took that part of it was longer than he had the short camp. So it made sense that, you know, he had to, you know, get rid of a lot of rust and, you know, just get him, you know, himself back acclimated into the ring. So, I do kind of forget that. I do believe we'll see a better Teofimo Lopez this weekend. I will say I don't think he's the same as what Mikey Garcia was in October 2021, where, you know, even at his absolute best, and I don't know if he's going to make the Hall of Fame, but there is an argument, you know, maybe just barely, but he's always kind of had one foot out the door with boxing. So in that, you know, when we saw that last year, it was like the fight almost kind of never got going, and that absolutely worked to Sandor Martin's advantage. I don't see that being the case this weekend. I do love Sandor Martin's confidence, though. He is not shook. We saw the photo shoot they had yesterday. You know, Teofimo's trying to get inside his head, and Sandor Martin had plenty to say. I don't know how well Teofimo Lopez speaks. I think he speaks Spanish, so we should have understood what Sandor Martin had to say. But yeah, he's, you know, certainly sounding like he's here for another upset.
These Spanish guys just brimming with confidence. Carmona this past weekend against Julio Cesar Martinez. Carmona probably would have won that fight if he didn't bust his hand up in the middle round and stop throwing left hands.
Right.
I like Sandor Martin's confidence as well. I agree with you that Mikey Martin was as much about Mikey as it was Sandor Martin. Like, Mikey just wasn't into it. He's not 147 pounder. That was his farewell. And Sandor Martin, to his credit, took advantage of it. Now he's able to cash in on it because he won. I really didn't understand the criticism of Teofimo against Campa. Yeah, he got hit a little bit, and you know, maybe more than he should have, and a bigger puncher might have done a little bit more damage, but he still got him out of there in the seventh round.
Right.
You know, still won that fight by knockout, and like, he's only going to get better as he stays active. The best Teofimo Lopez is an active Teofimo Lopez. And here he is back again, what, 4 or 5 months later, in a good fight, a high-profile fight, coming after the Heisman ceremony. I think he's going to be fine. I think he's going to look great in this fight. I think he's going to reestablish himself as, you know, a top guy in this weight class. The question I have now is, how will Top Rank move him after this fight? Not to look past Sandor Martin, but I think he gets the win. And then it comes to, where does he go from here? I think Top Rank, their preference is to do Teofimo against the winner of Josh Taylor, Jack Catterall, assuming it is Josh Taylor who is their guy. Teofimo's been talking a lot about Taylor as well. That fight, though, just got pushed back deeper into February. The interesting one to me, Jake, is Regis Prograe. I don't believe that we're going to get Prograe Ramirez in the next fight. I don't think Jose Ramirez is going to take that fight. That's been relayed to me by a couple of people. I think it's more likely you get Ramirez in some kind of tune-up fight before he goes on to a world title shot. If he passes, at least by the ever-fluid rules of the WBC, Teofimo Lopez would be next in line. And I've asked Teofimo, he's on the podcast after this, I've asked him, would he take that fight? He said, abso-bleep-and-lutely, I would take that fight. Do you think he's being truthful there? Do you think Top Rank would put Teofimo in with Regis Progre at this stage?
I will say this. So I'm with you. I was always told that regardless of the WBC status, Josh Taylor was the fight he wanted. That had plenty of heat. They had plenty to say about each other. This was back when Josh Taylor and Catterall was supposed to fight November 26th. That date's now been pushed back right to February. Now it's going to March. You know, they don't want to stack the pay-per-views over there. So if that pushes, if Taylor's fight is now pushed out of Teofimo's timetable, we just said, you know, an active Teofimo Lopez is a dangerous Teofimo Lopez. Maybe he absolutely wants that smoke. Maybe he does go after Regis, especially if it's a straight shot at Regis too. He doesn't have to wait out a Regis fight with Jose Ramirez anymore. So, he's going to have to do something because anything else is a risk. He's made it pretty obvious. He doesn't want to fight. He doesn't want to fight Rick Meridian's guys. He doesn't want to fight, you know, Arnold Barbosa. There's something very personal there. Where, you know, Rick keeps going after him and Teofimo's like, well, you know, I'm just not going to give you guys any payday then. So, he's going to have to do something. I think I don't know if ESPN can give him another stay busy fight to bridge that gap to get to Josh Taylor. So maybe he does just go straight for that second title shot. He keeps saying he wants to be, look, he wasn't undisputed at lightweight, but, you know, if he thinks he was, then he wants to, you know, become undisputed in two weight division. So the only way to do that is to start winning titles.
I agree with you. When the Taylor fight got pushed back again, it started to make me wonder, like, would Teofimo be willing to wait? Because a lot can happen. I mean, Taylor could lose to Catterall, and then that makes that fight completely obsolete. And Taylor could win, be like, you know what, screw it, I'm not staying at 140. I think it is likely he would stay at 140, because what's left for him at 140, or what's up there at 147? Like, do you really want to climb the ranks and let Boots Ennis kick the crap out of you, or, you know, Virgil Ortiz, or, you know, fights like that don't make a lot of business sense for Josh Taylor. But if something goes wrong, if there's a cut, you know, that pushes it into the summer, like, I can't see Teofimo sitting on the bench for 6 months. And, you know, Progre fight could be is a pretty marketable one. Like, Progre talks a lot of shit too. You know, Teofimo talks a lot. I mean, I would probably favor Progre at this point, but if Teofimo goes out and blasts Sandor Martin out of there, we could be talking about Teofimo once again as the guy that beat Lomachenko. This guy that, you know, The Kambosos loss was an aberration. The Campa fight was just a shake up the rust fight. Here he is, 5 pounds heavier as a top guy. That's a, you know, I'm not sure if that's a pay-per-view on ESPN. That's a pretty attractive fight for ESPN to put on.
No, I agree with you 100%. The only thing I'm thinking of is if, you know, Top Rank is obviously moving towards Devin Haney and Vasily Lomachenko. They want to keep that fight off pay-per-view. Now we're talking about spending a lot of money, like in this first half of the year, to put both of those fights on ESPN. As you said, it's probably, maybe the payday would push it to pay-per-view. That doesn't necessarily make it a pay-per-view fight, though, a pay-per-view sellable fight. The only thing I can think with Teofimo, if he bridges the gap, you know, assuming he wins this weekend, maybe he goes back to fighting Jose Pedraza if he's available. Maybe that helps him, you know, bridge that gap to get to Josh Taylor. If Josh beats Catterall and decides, okay, I'm going to stick around at a weight that would make sense, you know, to fight Teofimo, because they're not going to fight at 147. So that's the only thing I could think.
Go ahead.
Yeah. And then, you know, it's a matter of ESPN, you know, now you're dishing out two paydays because they were going to pay for, you know, Lopez and Pedraza this weekend. They got Sandor Martin. Now you're going to have to pay him a lot of money to go fight Pedraza to get to that bigger fight. You know, Top Rank's, it's not Top Rank's problem that Progre will need someone to fight if he doesn't have Jose Ramirez. So I, like I said, if they are available and Teofimo looks like the Teofimo of old, I would love to see Progre Teofimo next. But if not, I wouldn't be surprised to see Pedraza work his way back into the mix.
Yeah, I don't think Top Rank is interested in getting in the Progre business. But if Teofimo pushes for it, and if that fight makes a lot of sense and could potentially be put on pay-per-view, I don't know. And stranger things have certainly happened in boxing. All right, couple things before I let you go. I've been widely reported on Boxing Scene. I was reporting it as well. Ryan Garcia has effectively settled in on Mercito Gesta as his next opponent. Gesta is, the positives of Gesta is a two-time title challenger, which gives him something of a resume. The negatives are he's been relatively inactive. He did fight back in April. Decent win against Joel Diaz Jr., but he had a lot of time off before that. He was knocked out two fights before that. He had a draw against Carlos Morales, sandwiched in between. Here's my take on this fight. Like, this is kind of what I expected, right? Like, I didn't expect Ryan Garcia with Tank Davis in the offing in April to go out there and face a top guy at 140. Right. I didn't think that was going to happen. And I look at Gesta, and I see a guy who's in the back end of his career, 35 years old, not a ton of power, does have some knockouts, but not a ton of power, especially not at this level. And he's a southpaw. He's a 5'6" southpaw, which at least mirrors the kind of dimensions you're likely going to get from Gervonta Davis. I think when compared to the fight that Davis took against Hector Luis Garcia, this looks bad. But it's not because Hector Garcia is a good, it's a good fight. That's a pretty good interim fight for Gervonta Davis. But it's not what it's what I expected. And I'm actually kind of okay with it because, you know, assuming both guys, the key is getting these guys through these fights so we can get to April and get one of the biggest fights in boxing.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I wasn't mad at it either. I know, every time a Golden Boy fighter is there, like, okay, maybe he fights Jorge Linares. So fortunately, Linares has a fight scheduled, because then they were like, well, if he gets out of the fight unscathed, I'm like, if Jorge Linares is unscheduled, he's not getting out of it unscathed. Even if he wins, there's no way. So that would have been terrible. I know Hector Tanahara's name, I think, came up. That was a possibility.
That would have been another one that would have, after watching Tanahara against Zepeda, that would have been one that Ryan could have won pretty easily. Yeah.
And exactly, we know he's not fighting someone like William Zepeda next. So I'm perfectly fine with this. Like you said, you know, just dimension wise, and you know, fighting a lefty to get to Tank, he doesn't fight anything like Tank. But you know, it's kind of a sparring session to get ready for April. I'm fine with it. I'll be in Texas. I love going to fights in Texas. So I do, as long as that venue holds up. I believe it's going to be the same place where they had the Misfits Boxing, the Moody Center. So it's a fun venue. So. You know, Ryan, he's doing big business in Texas. So I like this as a stay busy fight. So it's not, you know, it's nothing sexy. It's acceptable.
Love that it's in Austin. Big Austin fan.
Yes.
Like I'm down for, that might be a Tuesday fight week arrival for me to get in there.
Yes.
A little bit earlier than usual. I mentioned Tank Davis, who had his press conference for Hector Garcia. All credit for Tank for taking this fight. I mean, if you make a top 10 fighter of the year list, the chance Hector Luis Garcia winds up on it because of the two wins he had, you know, against Chris Colbert, which was a quality win, against Roger Gutierrez, which won him a legit title. And Tank Davis didn't have to take someone on this level, but he did. And I give him all the credit in the world for that. I did find it interesting, Jake. We finally got the answer to the question, is Tank Davis still with Mayweather Promotions? No, he is not, at least not for the moment. Yeah. Tank Davis, in interviews after, said, you know, thank you to Mayweather Promotions, but I'm going to go my separate way. What information do you have about kind of this decision? And did it surprise you at all to see a Mayweather / Leonard Ellerby less Tank at this press conference?
It didn't surprise me. It kind of surprised me only because at one point, I think it might have, I'm not going to say who it was, but at one point it was suggested that Mayweather was still involved in this negotiations at some point. So that's the only part of it that surprised me. Like, why would they bring up his name if they weren't involved? I got the sense they were never involved at all. So absent that, no, it didn't. Because even back in May, like, you know, it was put to me that, like, even though like Leonard wouldn't be Tank's promoter anymore, everyone at PBC still kind of does business together. So the sense was that maybe there would be some involvement. I do like the way Tank handled it after the press conference. You know, he didn't slam him. He thanked, you know, he understands Floyd's on his own mission, which a lot of people aren't crazy about the stuff he's doing. But, you know, he's always appreciated, you know, what Leonard has done for his career. So he handled that part classy. I'm fine with that. I like the fact, like, Tank, he's in full control of his career. That, you know, it's the, we hear these shell promotions and we're like, oh, you know, it's just, you know, a fake name or whatever. It's really someone else pulling the strings. Tank always did have an infrastructure. He has fighters signed to the GTT Promotions label. You know, Ravon Little John is running it. He's got Lawrence Chivakin, you know, handling the publicity and all that. So there is an actual infrastructure in place. And he just seems happier. You know, he's like, he's in full control. Like, this feels very different than, like, when he's just appeared in D.C. Now he's the show. He's literally running the show in D.C. He's the star of the event. And he's, you know, everything's in his control. So whatever beef there is, if there's any beef with Mayweather, I know he's tweeted some stuff. You know, he's done his tweeting and deleting. I think he's going to find a way to suppress that and just, you know, move forward. Like, he's not going to carry all this negative energy. He's going to be fine moving forward with his career. And then we just got to see where Mayweather Promotions goes. I guess maybe it was a little surreal to not see him involved just because, you know, they helped, you know, build him up to become this big superstar that he is. He's obviously had, you know, the biggest part to do with it. But, you know, I'm happy for him. I am more curious to see where Mayweather Promotions goes from here. Because, you know, if Rolly's still on the roster, you know, maybe that's, you know, I don't know if he can drive an event. He's more of a B-side. But, yeah, that's It was weird. Like, you know, TGB, I guess they will get more involved as it gets going. But this was the Javonte Davis show on Monday. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I guess my question is, does it tangibly change anything when it comes to Javonte Davis? Obviously, the business side changes. Mm-hmm. But are we now looking at a Javonte Davis that is more likely to be in cross-promotional events? I mean, the clip that's haunted Mayweather Promotions for years now is when Floyd got that press conference and said, we ain't doing fights outside of our circle. I'm paraphrasing a little bit there, but he effectively said, we're going to keep things in-house, which opened Javonte up to enormous criticism because it kind of played out that way. They never really looked outside the PBC universe. Meanwhile, as 135 heated up, Javonte, even though he was making a lot of money and popular, was on the outside looking in. And you talk to certainly more people around him than I do, but I've always heard that bothered Javonte. Like the idea that these guys were actually taking real fights and Javonte was kind of this appearance guy, that people came to see Javonte and didn't really care about who he was fighting. Do you think that this represents a tangible change? Because Javonte is still represented by Al Haymon. Like that Al Haymon, who is still the most powerful figure in Javonte Davis's boxing world, remains in place. Do you get the sense that in the second half of this year, we're going to see Javonte Davis maybe going up against Devin Haney, maybe taking on a Shakur Stevenson, you know, being in the kind of fights people want him in?
Even if he doesn't get those fights, I'm with you on this path. I believe he's going to be a lot more vocal about making those fights happen, because he's even admitted that he's always in a position where he never asked for opponents. He just, you know, he showed up. He said, oh, they told him, this is who you fight. And he's like, okay, fine. So obviously he gets in these beefs with people, but now he's in a position where he can say, well, Al, this is who I want to fight. Whether or not Al says yes, that's another matter. But yeah, I do believe Javonte, he's going to be sincere. He finally, you know, he wanted this Ryan Garcia fight last year. He got it now. So, and credit to Ryan for, you know, doing his part to make sure it happened. So if, you know, if Devin and Shakur and those guys, if, you know, they're going to get their side, you know, as cooperative, then yeah, we will see those fights. But I do definitely believe, you know, at least Javonte, he's confident now that he can take the lead on that, you know, once he's done with this. And if he gets through Ryan Garcia, which I think he will, then yeah, he has a straight path to say, this is who I want next. Not, can I have this guy next?
Oh, you think he gets through Ryan Garcia? I'm not so sure. I've been more a critic of Tank's opponent choice than I am Tank. Like, he's obviously a star and he's powerful and he's good and all that. I can't get on board. You know, some people put Tank in the top 10 pound for pound. I think that's wild. Like, you got to beat somebody to be in the top 10 pound for pound. I just need to see him beat someone other than, you know, Jose Pedraza or somebody. You know, somebody. I need to see him beat somebody on a high level. And I think Ryan, look, I've always said this, first guy to land wins in that fight. Like, it's bombs away with those two. And Ryan's got the power. And I don't think Tank's ever been hit by anybody like Ryan. And Ryan probably has not been hit by anybody with the power of Tank either. So I think that's a coin flip type of fight. I might be in the minority there, but I think that's a coin flip type of fight. Last thing on Tank, I did find, you know, when he released that email that Eddie Hearn sent him, offered him $10 million to fight Ryan, I don't think that was the Eddie Hearn own he was looking for. Like, he was offered $10 million. And that was a guarantee. Like, I'm sure there were pay-per-view upside to that potentially as well. Like, I kind of read that and people were like, oh, you know, Eddie trying to steal Tank or whatever. But like, he got offered $10 million. Like, you know, Eddie has this habit of doing this. Like, I think he sent the same email to like Jermall Charlo as well years ago, like emailing guys directly. But like, if I'm Javonte, I'm not reading that and going, no, this is dumb. I'm reading that going, like, a $10 million guaranteed to fight Ryan Garcia. I got to at least consider that. And I heard him say one other thing was like, I think somebody asked him about cross promotional stuff. He's like, he mentioned Eddie and then he kind of paused and was like, I just want to make sure I don't burn bridges, you know, the bridges that he has right now. But I do like the idea that it seems like in Javonte's head, you know, opening up the world to other promoters and another universe seems to be the seed is planted there, I think.
Yeah, I'm with you. The thing I found funnier about that was people saw that, you know, with Javonte posted and they're like, Eddie's trying to steal Ryan Garcia. I'm like, no, he just wants to be involved in the fight. And Tank is the one who's tweeted, I'm paper with Mayweather. He even said that PBC, you know, didn't have paper on him. So if you're a promoter and you're reading that, like, okay, he's a free agent, I'm going to make an offer. I don't see anything wrong that Eddie did in that situation. So, I did want to back up on my prediction. Look, yes, I'm picking Tank in the fight. It's a 52-48, maybe 53-47. I just feel like with Deontay Wilder, when he fights, you wait for that right hand to land. With Tank, it's like at some, you could be outboxing him, which he never has been outboxed to that extent. Just once he lands, man, it's just tough to pick against that power.
You say the same thing about Ryan, though. Like, I mean, I remember, like it's a much lesser level. But remember when there was like all this, like Ryan's scared of Romero Duno, like didn't want to fight him, blah, blah, blah. And then he comes out, Romero Duno just walks into a bomb in the first round to the point where, because that happened and it wasn't a competitive fight, we had to stretch the Canelo Kovalev pay-per-view start for like an hour. We're sitting up there doing like a round table with Keith Idek for forever. Yes. It was like, that took a while. But like, I think, you know, Gervonta's got the power to put Ryan on his back. I think Ryan's got that power too. That speed is almost incomparable. Very few fighters have the kind of speed that Ryan Garcia has. And that's what makes this fight great. That's why I'm like, just please, I don't care. You could Mercedo Gesta, Hector Tanahara, I don't give a damn. Just get him in the ring. Right. Let him shake the rust off. I kind of wish, Jake, that the fight was at a lower weight because I want to see Ryan start to make his way back down towards that 136 limit that it's at. But whatever. He and Joe Goosen, they know his body. They figured it out. And we'll go from there. All right, last thing for you. We got to talk about Demetrius Andrade making an appearance on the podium. Is he the opener of the pay-per-view undercard? Is that what I'm understanding? Yes. He's the opener. That taking on DeMond Nicholson. Yeah, he is now. It'll be, I think, 14 months when he gets back in the ring from that knockout win over Jason Quigley. He dropped his middleweight title since then. He's campaigning at 168. He was saying a lot of the same things that I've heard for years after the press conference. Bring me Jermall Charlo. He's the guy I want, blah, blah, blah. At the very least, Jake, he's with the right people now to make these big fights. Like, if you're trying to make fights against Jermall Charlo, David Benavidez, Caleb Plant, you are now with the right promotion. So what do we know about, like, Andrade's standing within the PBC universe? Do you think this is a one-off? Is this part of, like, a multi-fight situation? And is this the year that Demetrius Andrade gets a real fight?
Yeah, I was going to say, it took for you to finally give up on Andrade Charlo for that fight to now become a reality, guys. So, poor you. Now you got to, you know, go through this all again in 2023. So, and I do believe we get that fight because I just don't know what else there is for Jermall Charlo, even within PBC Universe. I don't know if he gets the winner of Caleb Plant and David Benavidez. So, everything seems to be in place. You know, Charlo, I don't know if he's going to fight Carlos Adames. That's, you know, who he's going to have to fight at some point because that's his mandatory. Why not finally go fight Andrade, especially, you know, Showtime and PBC have been able to reel him in, you know, on their side of the street, so to speak. So I am happy just to see, you know, Andrade surface. It's starting to make some of these crazy business decisions make sense. It's like, I'm not sure I would, you know, he knows better than we do, but giving up as much as he's given up to be the opener of a pay-per-view, it's a strange decision, but it's the opener of a Tank Davis pay-per-view. So, you know, maybe he's getting a little bit more visibility. Maybe PBC has promised him, okay, we can get you a fight now. We can get you. I do like that he's starting the year, you know, he's fighting in January. That gives hope, you know, if they have the budget, maybe get him back in April or May, and then that puts him on the calendar of, you know, to fight the Plant Benavidez winner. I'm still holding out hope that it's going to be, we're not going to get the unification, but we'll get Andrade Charlo at 168.
Don't tease me on that one, Jane. Tease me on that. Yeah. It would be amazing if that happened.
Right. And he is at the right weight now, too, because now that he's at 168, PBC does have a lot of stock at super middleweight. So there's going to be plenty of opportunity for him there. It's not just, okay, well, he's going there with a middleweight belt and Charlo's your only option. He can have his pick of litter at 168.
He could do a lot. I mean, he could fight David Morrell for that make-believe belt that Morrell's got, winner or loser of Plant Benavidez. But Charlo still makes the most sense. Like, Charlo's out there, you know, he's weirdly like challenging Dimitri Bivol at events. It's like, what are you doing? Bivol's not going to fight you. And doesn't really have, as far as I know, has nothing on the books. He said he was coming back in February. I've heard nothing of that, of a potential opponent, in February at least. And he's still holding that WBC belt, which it might be 2 years before he defends it since he beat Montiel in June of that year. But look, 160, 168, 175, I don't care. Give me Charlo Andrade. I've already told people at Showtime I'll be happily be a unpaid like contributor if you need me just like to give some context behind this rivalry. I will just show up, I'll stare at a camera, and I will tell you why this is the biggest fight in boxing, baby, which is exactly what I said in November of last year. Good stuff. Jake, always appreciate your time, man. Great work. Read Jake's stuff on Boxing Scene. Follow him on Twitter. Appreciate you joining me, man.
Thank you, Chris. Always a pleasure to be on the show.
And when we come back, my conversation with Teofimo Lopez. So if you're looking to get more out of the NFL this season, now is the perfect time to download FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook, because new customers get a no-sweat first bet up to $1,000. That's free bets back if your first bet doesn't win. Just download the FanDuel Sportsbook app. It's safe, secure, and incredibly easy to use. Then you can bet on everything from the money line to touchdown scores to over-under yards, you name it. So many more exclusive bets, like both teams to complete their first pass attempts. You can bet on virtually anything going on in these games. FanDuel even lets you combine your bets for a chance at a bigger payout with a same-game parlay. FanDuel is also now live in Maryland. Marylanders, make sure you get in on the action with great offers just for you. So don't miss the chance to get your no-sweat first bet up to $1,000 in free bets when you join FanDuel with promo code BOXING. You bet with me with boxing, bet with me with the NFL. It's a great way to make those games matter a little bit more. Make every moment more with FanDuel, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Teofimo Lopez is the former 135-pound champion. He is now 1-0 at 140 pounds and will go for his second straight win on Saturday when he takes on Sandor Martin at the theater at Madison Square Garden. That's a fight you can watch on ESPN immediately after the Heisman ceremony. And Teofimo is back on the show. So, Teofimo, you just telling me you're feeling pretty good right now headed into this fight.
I am, man. I'm truly excited about this upcoming fight against Sandor Martin. You know, he has definitely the skill sets to give me a tough fight, and I'm looking forward to really challenging myself come December 10th.
So why are you excited about this particular fight?
Well, this was the fight that we wanted at the time because everyone else was occupied with other dance partners, you know, and, you know, so this was the best opportunity. You know, this is somebody that definitely came out of he pulled a big upset. You know, he kind of disrupted a little bit of the boxing game. And, this guy came out of the blue. You know, he beat a decorated fighter, one of the best Mexican fighters that we've seen of this era, Mikey Garcia, four divisional champion. He did what he had to do. So I think this is a great, great step up. I'm glad that things turned out the way it did. And, we wish nothing but the best for Jose Pedraza. We wish him health. You know, we understand he had non-COVID symptoms, but this was the guy that we originally wanted, and we got him.
Yeah, I was at that fight in Fresno when Martin beat Mikey Garcia, and that was as shocking an upset as I've seen in a while. I mean, Sandor Martin, I think, was like 25-1 as an underdog, and he pulled it off. I mean, when you went back, and I'm sure you've watched it at some point, but when you saw how he fought in that fight, what did you think?
That's interesting that you asked that, though, because we were actually going to the fight to see it live, you know, first. Mm-hmm. And then that's when me and Devin Haney and our fathers had scruffles. You know, that's when we were going back and forth face to face. But, you know, when we got there a bit too late and they announced the winner. When it came to all the fights and everything and his style, my coach, you know, my father, he's watching him. Really keeping the real insights of what he has that we could really, have an advantage on. Mm-hmm. And, what I could say is that what he capitalizes a lot is he likes the ropes. You know, that's his defensive mechanism to keep on. So there's a lot of things, but, you know, everyone needs to just tune in, you know, on ESPN, you know, so that you guys can see what we really can do to fighters like that as well.
That's right. That was the day when you and Devin Haney were going back. If I wound up in the middle of that somehow, you know, trying to figure out how to make that conversation work. We don't need to talk about that now, but you two have to dance at some point. You and Devin, 140 pounds, whenever Devin gets up there, that has to happen, right?
Absolutely. You know, listen, I'm at the 40 division. We understand that Devin is going to eventually move up to 140 as well. So, you know, listen, sorry for the wait. Everyone just has to wait and see, you know, with time.
So you're coming off your first win at 140 against Pedro Campa. How did you feel about that performance?
Just cleaning up the ring rust. That's all it was. You know, there's certain things that I know that I had to take with me to understand that, you know, it's just part of the game. You know, I haven't really fought consecutive like how I am now since 2019. You know, I would fight like 2 to 3 times, you know, and then after the pandemic hit and everything, I was only fighting once a year. You know, so that definitely slows down the momentum. It slows down my consistency on what we're trying to do. So this time around, when I came into facing Ciampa, you know, tough veteran. And then, you know, after what happened in 2021, you know, I blew my whole organs out inside, you know, my intestine, like basically everything inside. And what does that do? You know, I just made me realize I got to just train harder, fight harder. And that's what I performed that night. You know, I just had fun. You know, I miss that. I miss having fun in my sport. You know, for four years, I wasn't having fun. And look what I did in those 4 years. So imagine now I'm having fun. My body's comfortable. My body's finally happy. Like, okay, finally, bro. I wanted this 2 years ago. Now we're getting it now. So don't worry. We just stay active. And that's why you guys are going to get the best version of Teofimo now.
Why are you having fun now? And maybe you weren't having fun before because you were very successful over the last 4 years, quickly rising to world champion at 135, beating Vasily Lomachenko. Why now do you say you're having fun?
Because now I'm giving everything, my all to the sport. I'm not dividing it. I'm not giving my time to you know, my family and to my spouse or anyone like that. I'm literally giving it to my sport. You know, having fun with it, the thing that really created my life, you know, the thing that saved my life, really, you know. So those are the things. Boxing saved my life. And all I could do now is just really take that into consideration. You know, I had to learn, you know, my failures are what's going to bring my successes out even more. So, yes, I'm glad that everything turned out the way it did. You know what I'm saying? Before, when I was younger, I did not like it. You know, I hated failure. I hated it with a passion. And, of course, I'm not happy with it if I fail now. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. What I'm saying, though, it's not failure. What it is, really, it's the consistency of understanding that you only really fail when you quit. And I've turned the table on that now. And it's made me realize, and I've been staying more positive because of it.
Yeah, and look, I don't pretend to be able to know what you were going through a year ago, which is around what it was when you had that Kambosos loss, but having covered you for a long time, you could tell you were going through a lot, you know, going into that fight, like emotionally, mentally, physically, of course, going into that fight, getting down to that weight. From a mental perspective, from a where you are at personally perspective, how different are things for you now compared to what they were a year ago?
Huge difference, man. I feel like to be honest, man, last year I died twice, man. You know, I literally died twice just so I could come back this third time and do it right. You know, that's really what happened. You know, I had to go through these dark times and rough times. I think we all go through them, but it's not about how we go through them, it's how we come out of them. And I think that was just really that key factor. I think it was really, I let everyone else dictate how I should move my life when I think I'm doing just right, you know, with my decisions and the thing. I don't know everything, you know, I'm not supposed to. However, I feel like I carry myself well enough to know that at least with this, the sport that I do with these hands, because I'm not trying with these hands, I know I can handle myself. And if I can handle myself with these hands, then I should handle myself up here as well. And that was a big difference maker, but I had to really settle it in. Listen, you know, that was it, you know, and training harder. My purpose really is that. It's like the more I'm in the gym, the more I stay crazy in this, you know, I go in, you know, it's going to really set the tone for me to greater heights.
Did you feel after the Ciampa fight there were things that you had to clean up in the gym? I saw a lot of people suggested maybe you were hit a little bit too much in that fight. I mean, I was ringside for it. I thought you performed pretty well. You did have to shake some rust off and you were getting used to a new weight. But when you assessed the way that you fought, were there things you have worked on over the last few months getting ready for this fight?
Absolutely. I work on perfecting my craft every time. You know, the thing was, like Bruce Lee says, you know, he doesn't fear the man that knows 10,000 kicks. He fears the man that has practiced one kick 10,000 times. And that's what I did this whole year. This whole year was a turnaround. I practiced on one thing over and over and over and over and over and over again. You know, and that was the whole key. It was just, it was that. These things teach me. But how did I learn? How did the greats like Jordan, how did the greats like Tyson, Mike Tyson, how did the greats like Tiger Woods, how did they become great and greater? They had to fail. And people are so, they shy away from it. And I allowed others around my circle to even get to me. You know, like that was the problem. You know, now it's a difference maker. I'm setting the tone. I'm actually going to be the one, the frontier, to say, you know what? Yes, this is my team. But when I go in that ring, it is just myself defending my team. So I got to go out there and put on a show. I'm the leader of this new generation. I spoke on this before, and I'm going to continue to speak on it, because no one is willing to step up to the real truth. And no matter what it takes, no matter how many cuts I have to go through, I'm willing to take them for the right reasons.
You're right about failure, too. I mean, everybody points to the Michael Jordan finals record. What they don't talk about is the number of times you got beat in the first round during the 1980s when Larry Bird and, you know, others Absolutely. Were kicking his ass during that time. And he learned from that, and he got better from that. And in boxing, we do this too much, where we put too much emphasis on one loss. Only one all-time great has the perfect record. Everybody else has 5 losses, 19 losses in the case of Sugar Ray Robinson, who is maybe the greatest fighter of all time. It's crazy.
And what do we always receive as fighter of the year? We receive the what? Sugar Ray Robinson mm-hmm. Award mm-hmm. with the brass and all that, you know, because I have one myself. So I'm appreciative of that. You know, but that's what it is. And look, that's why everything happens for its reasons. God does not make no mistakes with any of us. No one else took the chance. I did. So what did that come to terms with? You got to take this defeat too, champ. You know why? Mm-hmm. You're going to change the narrative that Floyd put on everyone else. I love you, Floyd, and it's no hard feelings. It's just really, it's a new era. And everyone has an era. This right now is my era, and then my era is going to pass. My time is going to pass, but I'll be damned if I don't give it to the next guy that's going to take up. That's what it's about. You pass the torch. But that's why we call ourselves the takeover, because they wasn't passing the torch no more. They wanted to keep it. Now the takeover said, F this, and I'm grabbing this torch, whether it burns my hand or not, and we're going to keep holding it on until the next guy comes up. These next generation, these next kids that are out there that's working their butt off, that's listening to this right now, stay in the gym. You know, work your butt off. Don't anyone that tells you you can't do something, it's because they're scared of you. They can't do it themselves. You know, when someone says, I can't do something, it's like, no, you can't do it. I can, and I will, and I am. Those terms, it's like Steve Harvey said, instead of saying, I have to go to work, no, I get to go to work. There's a mm-hmm. big difference in just one word. Our tongue is very powerful, and I can't wait to put on a show. I can't wait to really, look, we can't, like, I'm going to phrase this, we can't just act. No more. We must do. And December 10th, all this that I'm talking about is not going to be anything unless I do what I got to do against this guy, Sander Martin. And I promise you, I'm a hurt him so bad, because it needs to be heard. You get what I'm saying? I don't need anyone to listen to me no more. It needs to be heard. And then that's what I'm going to bring to the table. Listen, man, I have everything in my power to beat these guys. And all I got to do is just stay in lane with myself.
And I love the platform for you too, which you fought on this day before, right after the Heisman Trophy. There's so many people watching. It's just such a great opportunity. I know that money matters the most in boxing, but getting all those eyeballs on you like that is huge. That really is long term only going to help the growth for you. Before I let you go, you're in what I think is at least top 3 divisions in all of boxing right now. 140 is really good. It's going to get even better in the next couple of years as guys move up. What does the Teofimo Lopez hit list look like? What are you eyeballing the most in 2023?
Well, God willing, the whole game plan for this one, God willing, you know, I come out healthy in this fight, no injuries. We capitalize on that, and we focus on 3 fights next year. You know, we're looking at somewhere April, May. And then in the summertime, and then back MSG Heisman night, you know, these are my mm-hmm. things. You know, it took me a while. It took me 2 years to make this my night. Well, actually longer. We're in 2022. It took me, I would say, 4 years. It took me 4 years. It took me 4 years to get to Heisman night, to become my night. And you mm-hmm. know what? That's great. It took me those times for a reason. And it takes everything built. Rome wasn't built in a day. You know what I'm saying? So my hit list is Josh Taylor. You know, we want him in the UK. We want to fight him, you know, and may the best man win against Cattaro and him. And then after that, we definitely want Pro Grace, you know. I know these guys, listen, these guys could talk all they want, But like I said, the words and the tongues are powerful. When they say if and when they say maybe, that's just cockiness. That's not confidence. When I said my father said I was going to beat Lomachenko, I agreed with him. I said, yes, we will. And what we did, we beat Lomachenko. There's a big difference. And you know what? That's something that they can't learn. You know, you can't even teach that. You either have it or you don't, you know? So that's why these guys even push like, I don't know if I could be at this weight anymore, you know, because the takeover is coming in and they know it. And we're going to come and take everything that they thought they could have. And that's become two-time undisputed world champion. And you know, I have a surprise for everybody after the fight. You know, I'm going to call out some names that people are definitely going to want to see.
I mean, the names you mentioned are great. Like, that's a hit list and a half right there. That is Fighter of the Year type stuff, again, in 2023 if you get through those fights. I'm curious, though, what happens with, like, Taylor. I assume he'd stay at 140 to fight you because there's not a lot there for him at 147. But if Jose Ramirez, who I don't think is going to fight Progre for his next fight, like, no. If he backs out, you're the next mandatory.
I'll fucking take that fight instantly.
that was my question. Like, would you take that if presented?
Absolutely,
right away?
Absolutely, absolutely. What? Heck yeah! I'll be a world champion right away. What are you talking about? Right after this, this is it. You know, God's plan, not mine. You know what I'm saying? So this is all about just staying consistent, really. You know, these guys got a handful with me. You know, and they know it. You know, they're all wolves, but I'm a sheepdog. I'm a sheepdog, and I'm coming for everybody. You know what I'm saying? This is how we do it, and we do it with love, peace, and just fighting. We fight to death, you know, and that's what it is. I think the thing that these guys don't understand is that, are you willing? Are you truly willing to die for this? Because I am. And if I didn't show it against the Campa fight or the Kambosos fight, then you got something else to see then.
Well, Teo, it's great to have you back, man. Great to have you active again, fighting for the second time in just 4 months.
We'll see. Hey, everybody mad right now. I don't blame them. Shit. I don't blame them. I'll be mad if I wasn't Teofimo either. Look, we headlining Madison Square Garden. Shout out to my MSG fam. Shout out to the staff members and everybody across the board. Listen, man, I'll say it like this, man. I'm so thankful. I'm grateful. This is all my fruits of labor. This is all from the hard work and the cuts and the bruises and just doing it. No, there's no right way. There's no wrong way. Just doing it hard. That's it. Just taking it in for what it is. Swallowing those hard pills that you got to swallow. Swallowing my pride. Swallowing my ego. And just understanding that this is what it's got to be. That's it. You know what I'm saying? So nobody else wants to do it. Everybody wants to look rich. Nah, I'm trying. Teofimo wants to be wealthy.
Well, Teofimo Lopez, Sandor Martin, Madison Square Garden, Heisman Night on ESPN. We'll see you there, Teofimo. Good luck, buddy.
You got it. Thank you, Mannix.
And when we come back, this week's picks brought to you by FanDuel. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Now, I'm supposed to talk here about what I remember and what I loved about my first car. And that's easy for me to do because I still have my first car. And as long as it keeps running, and so far so good, I intend to have that car probably until the day I die. That's how much I love that car. It is like a child to me. Now, it does require some upkeep, and that's why I'm grateful for a place like eBay Motors. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly. Brake kits, LED lights, roof racks, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Attention all wrestling aficionados. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. This is Freddie Prinze Jr., and I am beyond thrilled to announce that our wrestling extravaganza is back, and joining me once again is the one and only Jeff Dye.
Get ready as we highlight the most jaw-dropping matches, dissect the fiercest feuds, and uncover the latest twists and turns in the world of pro wrestling.
We're dusting off our legendary side quests and unleashing a barrage of brand new segments that will keep you guys on the edge of your seat, like our talks on Unsanctioned Thursdays.
Freddie, you know we gotta give the people what they want. This season, we have an all-star lineup of special guests who are gonna be gracing our podcast, bringing with them their own unique insights, experiences, and all of that in the world of pro wrestling and beyond.
Whether you're a seasoned wrestling veteran or a fresh-faced newcomer, we promise an experience like no other. So buckle up, wrestling fans. Listen to Wrestling with Freddie as part of the My Cultura podcast network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, time now for this week's picks brought to you by FanDuel. Not a great week for me last week. I'll cop to that right away. I told you to take Chocolatito by decision. Juan Francisco Estrada beat him. Close fight, but Estrada deserved that decision. Probably should have known better after Estrada got the benefit of the doubt from the judges in their last fight, but the combination of how good Chocolatito looked against Julio Cesar Martinez, plus how bad Estrada looked against Argy Cortez, I just thought Chocolatito was going to pull it out. Almost did. Rallied the second half of that fight, made it really close, but Estrada won that. I also took a flyer on the day of the fight on Carmona against Martinez. Carmona almost won big. He was an 8-1 underdog when I placed my bet. He was up like 4-1 through five rounds, then broke his hand. He broke his hand. Could only fight with one hand the rest of the fight. That ruined my chances of a big payday. So my apologies for last week. We're going to get back on track, though, this week. Because this week, we're locked in on the Josh Warrington-Luis Lopez fight over in the UK. You could bet Terrence Crawford, but that's not going to win you much. You could bet Teofimo Lopez, but that's not going to win you much. This fight, if you go a little bit bigger, has a chance to win you some money. And I'm pretty confident in my pick here. I'm taking Josh Warrington to win. Right now, he's at minus 156 over at FanDuel. So he's a slight favorite against Luis Alberto Lopez. I keep hearing all this talk about Luis Lopez is the next Mauricio Lara. And you remember, Mauricio Lara stopped Josh Warrington a couple of years ago, beat him up pretty bad in their fight. I just don't see it. I mean, Lopez has got some power, 15 knockouts on his 26 wins, but the guys he's fighting are just not great. So I don't think he's on the level of Josh Warrington. Now, I think Warrington might be a little bit gun-shy in a fight like this, so I don't think he's going to go to war with Lopez. I do think he's the better boxer. I do think he defends his title, and I think he does it by decision. So if you're looking for a bet to make a little bit of money on, take Josh Warrington by points or decision. That's plus 105 right now over at FanDuel. Josh Warrington defends his title against Lopez, wins by decision, and we get back on track. That's it for this week's episode. My thanks to Jake Donovan and Teofimo Lopez for joining the show. As always, subscribe, rate, review this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you download podcasts. And I'll see you next week.
It's Freddie Prinze Jr. and Jeff Dye back in the ring. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. Hey, Jeff. Are you ready to rumble our way into an all-new season of Wrestling with Freddy?
You better believe I have. I've been practicing my body slams, and I'm jacked.
All right, don't go injuring yourself now. We'll be highlighting the best stories and matches of the week in wrestling from AEW, WWE, and have one-on-one talks with the best talents in the world of pro wrestling.
Listen to Wrestling with Freddy on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers. All that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.